Welcome to this week's episode of Trista's Plate Story Podcast. I'm Trista Polo from iwokeupawesome.com, and I am your host. Each week, we learn the story behind that vanity plate. The one you saw driving down the road? What did it say? What did it mean? Why did they choose it? This week, we meet Lori Seitz from Virginia. Her license plate, Zen Rabbit, represents a childhood treasure and a professional brand she built so successfully, it has followed her through two very different companies. Lori works with entrepreneurial professionals to improve their relationship building abilities so they can find more clients, strategic partners, and career success. Lori's insight comes from more than 25 years of experience in marketing and communication. In addition to her successful coaching business, Lori is a strong proponent for increasing literacy worldwide. She has served as a pre-GED teacher and an adult literacy tutor. You can often find Lori in the weight room at the gym, or you might see her running outdoors because she also loves eating and baking. Lori shares her plate story today, as well as some great tips on building a powerful network in a virtual world. Now let's meet Lori. Welcome to this episode of Trista's Plate Story Podcast. I'm with Lori Seitz. Her plate is Zen Rabbit, which I absolutely love. Welcome, Lori, and Lori's cat.
Thank you, Trista. Great to be here.
You have a co-guest with you. You want to introduce your friend?
This is Karma. She likes to appear whenever a camera comes on.
Well, it'll give us good karma for this conversation, right?
Yes.
And if anybody's wondering, Karma is a black and white cat, mostly black, right? A little bit of white on her belly. She's adorable. She's roaming around. You can see her on the video version of this podcast episode. So, Lori, tell us about your license plate, Zen Rabbit.
Yeah, Zen Rabbit is the name of my company. And the original version of the company was Zen Rabbit Baking Company, which I started back in 2003. And it's since evolved into something different. But when I was looking for a name for that company, I was going through a whole bunch of different names and trying to come up with something good that would be good for branding. And landed on Zen Rabbit. It kind of just came to me as, hey, this would be a good name. But then I had to, then people are like, well, where did you get the name Zen Rabbit? So I had to back up and kind of make up a story about where the name came from. but there is truth in where it came from. It just wasn't part of the conscious thought process, but it was subconsciously there. When I was a baby, my mom bought this stuffed pink rabbit and put it in the crib with me and figured out that she could take all the other animals out. But if the rabbit wasn't in the crib, I wasn't sleeping. And as I got a little bit older, I would rub her ears for comfort. It's just, she was actually my Zen Rabbit. And this is the part that I said maybe unconsciously came into the creation of the name. But yeah, so she was my Zen Rabbit. There's a picture actually on my website.
I love it. My version of that, his name was Charlie, and he was a quilted, I'm not sure now if looking back if he was a horse or a dog, because it was like a quilted sort of, four legs and whatever. Yeah. But boy, he was very important to me. You said you had one particular thing you were really known for with that company. Can you share about that?
The whole basis around which I started it was the gratitude cookie. And the gratitude cookie was kind of a cross between a butter and a sugar cookie based on a family recipe. When I would make them for friends and family, people would say, oh my gosh, these are so good. You should sell these. So I came to a point in my career where I had an opportunity to do that. I came up with the idea of packaging them in customized packages as a way for business people to say thank you to their clients and to people who sent them referrals and other partners.
I love that. And that was a very successful venture for you.
It was. I ran it for 11 years and I got to a point where I couldn't scale it the way I wanted to. And it just became so difficult to just keep going at the pace that I was going without getting the results that I really wanted. And so I closed that business down in 2014, but it was, it had a great reputation. It was a great product.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds very cool. Like, you know, you always want to look for a really tight niche. And I think you definitely did that. And I think every business that's growing comes up with up to that spot.
Yeah.
I either have to be okay with where I am. I have to rethink how my business works so I can scale it, mm-hmm. or I have to set it aside. And so I think any business that's successful, they come up to that crossroads.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And I just, at that point, couldn't figure out how to get past it. And yeah, so that was a difficult decision, but
yeah, I bet.
I had to do it. So
I bet. Do you ever regret closing it?
Yeah, sometimes I do, because honestly, I think back, I'm like, well, if I knew now, maybe what I didn't know then, I could have made it work. Or I at the time would think, well, I, you know, somebody else could come in here and run it with the knowledge they have and they could have made it work, but I just couldn't do it at the time.
Yeah.
And it, you know, a lot of pieces fell into place at the very end, but it was kind of too late.
Well, anybody who's ever owned a traditional business especially can probably relate to the kinds of things you had to face and the challenges that you faced. And I think it's why so many businesses don't last to the long term.
I think especially for entrepreneurs, the message never give up is so drilled into your head that you feel failure if you close. You just keep looking at every avenue. How can I keep going forward? How can I keep moving? How can I keep, but sometimes that's not the best way to proceed. Sometimes you have to stop beating your head against the wall and go, okay, maybe I need to turn around and try something completely different. And maybe that involves shutting this down and pivoting into doing something that is more worthy of my time and effort.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is I certainly don't look at that venture ending for you as a failure, except maybe the lessons you learned. Mm-hmm. I think nobody can really judge how a business owner decides to move forward because they're not in your shoes.
Right.
So I acknowledge you for having the courage to close, because I'm sure that was probably as hard a decision to make as keeping it open.
It was. It sure was, because my whole identity was in that business.
Yeah. Well, and you did pivot, and you now have a thriving coaching business, and you actually created a brand that stuck with the Zen Rabbit. So share a little about the transition from baker to coach.
Yeah. I have a background in marketing and corporate communications and a little bit in broadcast. So I understand marketing. And I did such a great job. I'll pat myself on the back, but with some help from some team members too.
Sure, of course.
Of branding that company with that name, Zen Rabbit, because it's so memorable that people would remember the name. They wouldn't necessarily remember my name, but they would see me and they would say, Zen Rabbit. So when I came back to my entrepreneurial venture that I'm involved in now, I actually started this company with a different name. And after a little while, it became apparent that I needed to change that name. It was too restrictive. So I came back to the name Zen Rabbit because everybody still associated me with that name. A lot of the people in my network still knew me because of Zen Rabbit. So okay, fine. My company's still called Zen Rabbit. Informally, I call it Zen Rabbit 2.0. It's not the baking company anymore. But and I still had the license plate. Like, I was like, oh, I don't want to have to change my license. You know.
There you go. I mean, that worked. So share a little about what exactly you do for your clients.
Yeah. So now I work with clients to help them strategically build a business network. When I started Zen Rabbit, the baking company, I had to go to networking events to meet clients, to meet referral partners, strategic partners, all that kind of thing. And it was really intimidating for me, as what I will refer to as a quiet person, to walk into a room full of people that I didn't know and break into a conversation, start a conversation with somebody I didn't know. That was really difficult for me. And so I learned how to do it better and how to build a business network. And that's so now, that's what I'm helping other business professionals, specifically more in sales, but other business professionals learn how to do, because a business network is the most valuable asset a business person could possibly have. No matter what happens in your business, in your life, if you have a strong network, you have access to opportunities that you might not otherwise have. And this became really apparent when I closed that business. My network was strong. When I started this business, it was easier because that network was still in place.
Absolutely. And I think we have another co-star. I see a kitty cat, not black. What's her name?
Panther.
Oh, that's awesome. Now, you help people who are nervous. Maybe I'm going to say the word shy. I like your term quiet, to be able to be out there and create a network. I really believe your network is your net worth. It never occurred to me. I'm a gregarious, outgoing person. I like the stage, the spotlight. I've done improv. Like, I'm a very out there person. But for somebody who's not, and having to exist in groups of people where you're a stranger and everybody else that you walk into this room and everybody else seems like they're great friends and they've known each other forever, and mm-hmm. you're the outsider.
Yeah.
Like, I can imagine that that's how it feels when you're going into a new networking setting. So what kind of tips would you have for somebody who's walking into that scenario?
Yeah, well, I look at networking as having three parts. What do you do once you're at the event? And then how do you manage the follow-up piece and the building and the nurturing of the network, which I think is actually the most important part. But once you're, so an event, what I would advise people is figure out how you're going to answer the what do you do question, because it's the worst question in the world to ask. Like, never ask the question, because it doesn't really tell you anything. But people somehow have been trained to ask this question. And so you know you're going to get it. So instead of standing there like a deer in headlights, prepare an answer ahead of time so that you can answer it and then pivot the conversation into something more interesting, such as, so my favorite question for asking people at networking events is, what are you excited to be working on right now? You get into such a more interesting conversation, and people are usually really excited to answer that question. And it can be answered in a variety of ways, whether you're talking about something going on in your business or in your personal life, in a community, whatever it is, it just leaves the door wide open.
You know what I love about that question is it sets you apart, because you're not asking the same question that everybody else is. It allows you to see a more authentic side of a person.
Exactly.
Because they're not prepared and they haven't memorized it and they haven't said it 50,000 times before. So it's like you're plugging into the real them, because they can't give you a stock answer because they don't have one. So I love that about it.
Well, and that's the beauty of it, and of asking other questions that are not, let's say, normal networking questions, is that you get to know the real person. And that's really what networking is about. It's about making a connection with a human.
Absolutely. Now, we are in a weird time. Everything is virtual. Nobody's in the same room. So how do you advise people in this situation, in a virtual world, to build a network, add new people to the network, expand a quality network?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm in the same boat you are, because I do a lot of in-house workshops at companies and speaking at conferences. And a lot of what I do is teaching people how to do in-person networking. So yeah. But I've been doing a lot of virtual digital workshops on this very topic. And the way to manage right now is, we've all been to in-person events in the past 6 months or 8 months or a year, where we've collected contact information, business cards, other kind of contact information, put it on our desk, and it sits there gathering dust. Okay. So now is the best time to follow up. on those connections and connect with them through social media. LinkedIn is the best business social media for my purposes. I guess it really depends on what your business is, what social media platform works for you. But connecting with people there and then connecting with them to set up phone calls or video chats with them to just kind of get to know them. And because people are a little more laid back, they're not so much in business mode. I mean, you got cats coming into the conversation.
Dogs barking, kids dogs running barking. Behind you naked, I've heard.
Right. I've seen those videos. And so people are a little more informal. And it gives you, again, another opportunity to get to know people on a more human level, which is where you really start building the relationships. And then, thirdly, asking people that you already know for introductions to people that you don't know. And again, I think people are more open to making connections now more than ever. So I've been telling, this is such a fantastic time for networking, actually, and for building your network.
Yeah, I agree with that. I have an online business and we're exploding right now. And typically I'll say, like, who do you know that's entrepreneurial or looking for an additional stream of income? And the person's like, I don't know, I'll have to think about it. But now with 30 million people on unemployment, with everybody doing things remotely, with so many people taking on extra gigs, side hustles to fill in the income gaps,
yeah,
I'm getting referrals so easily now.
I don't think that virtual is ever going to replace face-to-face. Like a lot of people are saying now, well, everybody's learned how much they can do virtually, so they will continue doing it and in-person events will be affected and they won't happen as much. I don't agree with that. We still as humans are wired to connect interpersonally and that is never going to go away.
Yeah, I think you're right. In fact, we are, as I said, we've moved everything virtually. We're not doing any in-person events right now. I think when we go back to the in-person events, people will be going in even larger groups mm-hmm. and numbers than before, because it's like, where are my people? I need to be around some people.
Yeah, right. This time has actually emphasized what I've been talking about for a couple of years, that the in-person is so important.
I was just thinking when you were talking about walking into a room full of strangers, it's almost like, you know how people, their first fear is public speaking? It almost feels like a small microcosm version of public speaking.
Yeah, it's interesting because I am a professional speaker as well, and I belong to the National Speakers Association, and I found that a lot of professional speakers are completely fine on stage. When they're up on stage, they're in control. But put them down networking and mingling with the audience, and they freak out. It's really interesting because people are, yeah. They think that, well, if you're on stage, then you should be fine talking. No, that's not the case. So yeah, it is interesting.
I want to hook into LinkedIn. I think LinkedIn is a mystery to a lot of people. I don't really see LinkedIn as a valuable resource, but I know other people who get a lot of work from it. So can you give some tips on using LinkedIn to, especially now, right? Because we're virtual, it's a perfect time to dive into that.
Right. It's really about engagement and getting on and in engaging in other people's posts. What are they talking about? Can you leave a comment, a like, a comment, a share? And getting involved in the conversation, just as if you were at an in-person networking event. You were just standing on the side in a corner watching what's going on. You're not going to get as much benefit as if you step into the room and get involved in some conversations. Same thing on LinkedIn. And the same thing in terms of asking for introductions. Say if you were at an event, you could potentially go to the event organizer or go to the person that you see is involved in a lot of conversations and ask that person for an introduction. Could you introduce me to whomever it is that you want to meet, who's your ideal client, who's your ideal referral source? Is there somebody here that you think I should be talking to? You can do the same thing on LinkedIn.
I like that. Why would I choose LinkedIn versus Facebook groups, which are very popular now?
Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily one over the other. It really depends on who do you want to meet? LinkedIn is very business oriented. You know, you're not going to see pictures of people on spring break necessarily over on LinkedIn. But so the conversations are focused a little differently. But if you're looking for, school teachers, let's say, they might be more on Facebook than on LinkedIn. And so it's really just a matter of who are you looking to connect with and where are they? Because they may be on Instagram. They might be on TikTok. I don't know. It really, it depends. But again, that's why it's so important, this piece before you go to a networking event. So what do you do before you get to an event? Part of that strategy is figuring out what is it that you're offering and to whom, so that you can know who to ask, where to find them, one, and then second, who to ask for introductions.
That makes perfect sense. And that's great, using it as a connector tool, like, hey, can you introduce me to these types of people? I really like that. Now, you said you have some digital courses. Is there anything coming up that you think would really help people in this kind of environment that we're in?
Yeah, I have a video course that I've just completely revised and updated, and it's called Business Connections Mastery. So that is a great learn on your own tool.
And who would you say is a good candidate to take that course? Like, who would get a lot of value from that course?
The people I'm finding are really getting a lot of value from it are salespeople who have 0 to 10 years of experience. Business people in general, but a lot of salespeople. Because in order to be successful in business, you need to have this asset. You need to know how to build this asset.
Yeah, absolutely. How can someone have access to your course?
Yeah, that is at zenrabbit.com/BCM, which is Business Connections Mastery.
Nice. That's easy enough. We'll make sure that's in the show notes and the blog the video description and everything so that people can get to that easily. Is that live now?
It is.
Awesome. Okay, great. I like to turn the tables and just have you ask me a question if you have one. So do you have a question for me?
Yes. If you were stuck on a deserted island and could only listen to one musical artist, who would it be?
That's a tough one. I will say I have a couple of playlists that have collections of music that really pump me up and get me feeling positive and happy. And most of the songs on there currently are Meghan Trainor. She's very bold and strong and powerful, and she doesn't apologize for who she is. And she owns her greatness. And she has a good poppy upbeat that you can dance to. So yeah, I guess I would have to say at this moment, Meghan Trainor.
Okay, cool.
Good question. Good question. I want to thank you so much for being on with me, Lori. This was super fun.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of Trista's Plate Story Podcast. Please subscribe to Trista's Plate Story Podcast to get the story behind all those vanity plates driving with you on the road. And if you would like to nominate the owner of a license plate, including you, or visit any of our partners and sponsors, come and see us at platestory.com. That's PL8story.com, and give us the details. If you enjoyed this episode, please drop a review and give us a share. I'm Trista Polo, wishing you well on the road to your next adventure.